We're starting a series on the book of Ruth. I mentioned that last week. And so today we're going to start that series. It's just a little book, 85 verses in all. It's been called the greatest, by some writers, the greatest piece of literature ever written. Another writer called it, called Ruth the Cinderella of the Bible. Ruth's a story of redemption, love, grace, and hope. And as we start this journey, let me tell you a story, or one of our holidays that we took quite a few years ago when Kathy was pregnant, 6 months pregnant, actually, with Lee. We decided to go to Disneyland. We decided we would drive down in our Ford Pinto station wagon. It was blue, and we were going to drive down and camp, sleep in the back of the wagon sometimes, and we had a tent, and so it was a good trip. We got all the way down to L.A., and we were driving into L.A. It was late at night. Well, not late at night, just becoming dusk and getting dark. We stopped at a gas station because we weren't too sure where we were going. So I pulled into a gas station to ask for directions, and the young man said, "Oh, you just drive down here to highway, whatever it was, turn right, and just follow that highway along, and you'll see Disneyland. It'll just sort of rise out of the nowhere on the right there, and you can't miss it." So we drove down the highway, and we saw the highway that we had to turn right on. We turned right, and we started driving. And the gas station attendant made it sound like it wouldn't be very long, you know, like maybe a few miles before we would see the Disneyland sort of rising out of the ground there. And we were driving, and we drove and drove and drove, it seemed like forever. And so I thought, oh, maybe we've missed it. Somehow something's wrong. It's getting darker, and we better just turn off. We better find an exit and find some more directions. So there was an exit, and I took the exit, and as soon as I took the exit, I knew it was a big mistake. It was just went off the exit under this sort of bridge, and it was dark, drove up, and started looking for somewhere to find some direction. Well, I just assumed when we got off the exit, we would quickly find a gas station, but there was none. We drove around a little bit, found a corner store. Well, a corner store, you'll be able to get directions. Parked the car. There was a few people outside. I walked in the corner store. Nobody would speak English to me, and I didn't know Spanish. I didn't even know any Spanish. I probably didn't even know hola then, and I was just like, nobody would speak to me in the store or outside. I got back in the car, and we decided, let's just get back on the freeway, on the highway, and just keep going till we find a better exit. So we started driving around, and we couldn't get back on the highway. I could not find a highway entrance. In fact, I was just about at a point where I thought, I'm going to back down the exit that I came up and get back on the freeway that way. And then, there was a police car parked on the side of the street. I thought, great. I pulled in behind the police car, got out of the police car, and these two police officers have a guy spread out on the lawn, and they look at me as if, what are you doing here? Why are you in this neighborhood? You're white. This is an Hispanic neighborhood. It is not safe here for you. I explained what we were doing, and we were just trying to find the freeway entrance, and we just wanted to get to Disneyland. So they gave us directions, and we got back onto the freeway. And I can tell you, it was really good. It felt great to get back on track, to get back to where we were supposed to be. It was a little scary, and can be a little scary, when we make a wrong choice, a wrong decision, and get off track. I think Naomi might have felt a little like that while she was in Moab. We're going to start in Ruth chapter 1, and we're only going to go through the first 7 verses today. But Ruth 1 and 2, the first half of 2, reveals, in the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land, and a man from Bethlehem in Judah, together with his wife and 2 sons, went to live a while in the country of Moab. The man's name was Elimelech, and his wife's name was Naomi, and the name of their two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. The first thing we notice, it's in the time of Judges. It's before Israel has a king. They don't have kings yet in Israel, and they have judges that sort of ruled the land. So we know that the time of Judges was sometime between 1350 B.C. and 1050 B.C. So that's the time period that we're looking at. And during the time of Judges, Israel was at one of its lowest points in history. In fact, the days were marked with lawlessness, idolatry, false religion, theft, drunkenness, homosexuality, sexual perversion, violence, national division, civil war, and extreme unbelief. Maybe even sounds a little like today. Israel was a national mess, both morally and spiritually. Judges, actually the last verse in the book of Judges, Judges 21, verse 25, sums up the condition well. In those days, Israel had no king. Everyone did as he saw fit. Everyone did as he saw fit. Truly, when people are doing as they see fit, things become a mess. The writer goes on to reveal that there was a famine in the land of Israel. It's interesting, Elimelech and his family live in Bethlehem, which means the house of bread. And if you think of a house of bread, you're thinking of a house where there's lots of food, but there isn't. Yet it's God's promised land to Israel. God has given Israel this land. It's Elimelech's inheritance. It's a land that's supposed to be flowing with milk and honey, a place of abundance. And now we read that it's a place of famine. It has become a place where there's a serious food shortage. We might wonder why God would bring a famine on the land. Why would he bring a famine on the promised land that he brought the Israelites to and he'd given it to them? Well, we notice that God uses famine in the Bible a number of times. In the time of Joseph, there was a famine in the land. And Joseph's brothers had to go to Egypt, remember, to get food. Why was there a famine in the land? God brought a famine in the land so that Joseph's brothers would know that God was in control and that maybe they would come back to serve him and put him first place in their lives. We can read in the times of Elijah, the Lord used a famine to turn the people back to himself. We read in the parable of the prodigal son that there was a severe famine that had a lot to do with the son returning to his father. So we see that God uses famines. When we look at the moral and spiritual mess that Judah was in, it's not surprising that God uses a severe famine to stir the hearts of the people, to get their attention, that they might turn their eyes and ears and hearts back to him. You know, often as we go through life, God will orchestrate famines or trials in our lives. They might not be a famine where there's no food, but it might be a financial famine where there's more month than money. Everybody goes, isn't that always the case? Is there a case where there's more money than month? Or it might be a physical famine where health and well-being seem to be elusive. There may be a spiritual famine when the heavens become like brass and the Lord seems so far away. Listen to this quote that Kathy shared with me. She had written it down a number of years ago. There is always a famine in the heart when a person moves away from God. Let me just read it again. There is always a famine in the heart when a person moves away from God. Is that not what Elimelech and his family were doing? Were they not moving away from the promised land, the land that God had given the Israelites? the land where God was actually present and there, was he not moving away to Moab? Is that not something that we do from time to time when there's a famine? We decide to try and do it on our own, and we move away from where God is, and we move over here, and we try to work it out on our own and try to get it done. Maybe that's why we struggle with the famine in our heart. We move away from God. That famine might be a financial famine. It might be a physical famine. It might be a spiritual famine. It could be any type of famine or test or trial that we're going through. It is real. Don't let me put on you that it's not real. It is real and it is tough. It is not an easy thing to go through. And when the famine, the trial comes into our lives, we can do one of three things. We can endure it, we can escape it, or we can embrace it. Let me explain. If we just endure the famine, the trial, it becomes our master, and we become the servant. It controls us. We're just there struggling through the famine, through the trial, and we're just saying, I got to get through this, and that's all there is to it. And we become bitter and hard. And what do? We start blaming God for the famine. God, why did you put me here? Why are you doing this? Or we blame others. It's Joe's fault that I'm here. It is what it is. And I just have to survive somehow. I have to do it. And we endure it. And we become bitter and hard. That's enduring the famine. I know none of you have done that, but I have. But probably something that we do more than just enduring it is trying to escape it. And you know, whether we endure it or we escape, try to escape it, we'll probably miss what God is trying to tell us in through the famine, through the trial. But listen to what happens here. This is, isn't that what Elimelech did in Ruth chapter 1 verse 1? We read, in the days when judges ruled, there was a famine in the land, and a man from Bethlehem in Judah, together with his wife and two sons, went to live in the country 50 miles away in Moab. He took his family for a while. We'll read a little later that while was at least 10 years. Just a while. We're just going over here until there's food back over there. We're going to take care of ourselves. I find it kind of interesting that when we try to escape the famine, when we try to escape the trial, usually we're not thinking very clearly. I mean, Elimelech, what was he thinking? You're going to take your wife and your two sons out of the inherited land that God gave you, and you're going to take them 50 miles over here to Moab. I'm not saying you guys all live in Moab, but over here to Moab, the country that wars against Israel and Judah, a country that lives in idolatry, that doesn't serve the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, doesn't serve the living God, doesn't serve Yahweh, and you're going to come from here where there's a famine and go over there? You're going to raise your sons over here outside of God's presence? Elimelech, what are you thinking? Moab had dragged Judah and Israel into sin before, and now you're taking your wife and your children there. Elimelech is walking by sight and not by faith. Elimelech is walking by the physical and not by faith. He's saying there's bread, there's food over there. There's no food here. There's a famine here. And my sight tells me that I need to be over there, where faith says I should be over there with God. There is a good chance also, if we try to escape the famine, the trial, the struggle, we might escape it only to re-encounter it again. I've seen that so many times in my life and in the lives of others. Here's the trouble, and we come and we get to it and we go, no, we're going to go around. We'll miss it. Oh, good, we got around it, only to find it up here again. So we can endure it, we can escape it, or we can embrace it. I know. How many want to embrace the famine, the trial, the struggle? Oh, yeah, we'll just wrap our arms around it and say, oh, that's right where I want to be. But that's where we need to be. If we learn to embrace our trials, our famines, then they will become our servants, will become the master, and we'll see the trial and the famine do the work in our lives that God desires it to do, and God will work all things together for good, for His glory. And I know that's hard. That's way easier to say than to do. But God's intention is not to drive us away. His desire, when He brings a famine or a trial, and believe me, He brings them into our lives for our good, and that's hard to imagine, but it's not to drive us away, but to draw us closer to Himself, draw us near to Him. He may bring the trial and the famine in to try and correct us. Listen to Revelation 3, verse 19. It says, those whom I love, did you catch that? Those whom I love, I rebuke and discipline. So be earnest and repent. I would honestly say that Lee thought there were times when I didn't love her because I disciplined her. And my son would say the same things. There are times when they don't think they're loved because they were disciplined by their father. But the truth is, if I didn't love my children, I wouldn't bother disciplining. What difference does it make? Let them go their own way. Let them do what they want. God loves His children. And He doesn't want them just wandering their own way. He doesn't want them living in the land and doing whatever they feel fit to do. He wants them living for Him in the best way that they can. So He disciplines us, He rebukes us, and He says, be earnest, repent, have a godly sorrow. So that might be one of the reasons He brings a famine or a trial into our lives. Not saying that's the only reason. He may be bringing it to teach us something. Listen to 2 Corinthians chapter 12 and verse 9. We read these words. They're of Paul. But he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weakness so that Christ's power may rest on me. Paul has just been struggling with the Lord. He's got a thorn in his flesh, he says. And I've prayed 3 times that God will remove it. I've prayed 3 times that I can escape this thorn of my flesh. And God says, really, I placed that thorn in the side that you might realize that it's not you that can do it. You need to realize that I am your strength. And through me, you can do all things. But without me, you can do nothing. So God uses the thorn, the trial, the famine to teach Paul. I know we all think that Paul knows it all, that he's a great man of God, but he only learned it as he walked with God, just like the rest of us. How we react to the famine experience determines whether it becomes a time of blessing in our lives or a time of devastation. As Elimelech takes his family to Moab to escape the famine in Bethlehem, it doesn't go that well with him or his family. Listen to Ruth chapter or verses 3 to 5. Now Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left with her 2 sons. They married Moabite women, one named Orpah and the other Ruth. After they lived there about 10 years, both Mahlon and Chilion also died. And Naomi was left without her two sons and her husband. We left Bethlehem because there was a famine, and we would go over there where there was food and we would survive. But we get over here and Elimelech dies, and it sounds like he doesn't live very long while he's in Moab, and he dies. And then his two sons marry Moabite women, which they're not supposed to do, but they did. And around 10 years later, they both die. And now Naomi is left on her own. She has nothing except her two daughters-in-law. There is no family to support her, and she cannot support herself. How is that possibly going to work? See, in Jerusalem, in Bethlehem, and in Judah, in Israel, there was something set in place to take care of the widows. The family would take care of the other parts of the family would take care of the widows. But over in Moab, she has no family and nobody to take care of her. It hasn't gone well. We can only imagine the hopelessness that Naomi is feeling. We can only imagine the loneliness and the desperation she must have felt. But you know, it's exciting that God never gives up on his children. When we've moved away from him, he hasn't moved away from us, and he's right there. He makes sure Naomi hears that the famine in Judah is over and that there's food there. Listen to verses 6 and 7. When she heard in Moab that the Lord had come to the aid of his people by providing food for them, Naomi and her daughters-in-law prepared to return from there. With her two daughters-in-law, she left the place where she had been living and set on the road that would take them back to live in Judah. We're not sure how Naomi heard about the famine, that it was over. We're not sure. Somehow, God made sure that Naomi would know that the famine is over. In other words, he wants to produce a hope in her desperate, lonely life while she's over here in Moab saying, there's a hope, there's a light. You can go back home. You can go back to where God is worshipped. There's a light there. There's a hope. It produced that glimmer of hope in her that God had come to the aid of his people and that there was food in Judah. Now, maybe she wasn't going back for the right motives, but there was a glimmer of hope there. It produced enough hope for Naomi to stir her heart to move back to the promised land, to Judah. In our famines, in our trials, as tough and as real as they can be, there always needs to be a hope. And there always can be, because God is always there, willing to share that glimmer of hope. So we will turn and start our journey back towards him. See, we can endure, we can escape, and we can embrace the famine, the trial that we're facing. And maybe you're not facing a famine or a trial right now, but let me guarantee you that you will, because God uses them to grow us, to draw us closer to himself. If we just endure it, we will probably become hard and bitter and angry against God and his people, and won't want anything to do with it. And unfortunately, I've seen people go there, and the road is hard to come back. If we try to escape the trial, it will cost us, and we will only wind up in the trial again at some time. I mean, it cost Elimelech and Naomi a lot to leave Bethlehem, the place where God was, to go to the land of Moab. It cost Elimelech's life and the two sons their lives just to escape the famine. May we be people who embrace the famine. May we be people who say, God, I don't like this. It's tough. It's real. It's hard. I don't like it. It doesn't feel good to me. I would like the thorn to be removed from my flesh, but your will be done and not mine. Have your way in my life. Your kingdom come. And do what you want to do. Father, open my heart that I might be in control with you and understand what you're trying to teach me through this struggle. May it be a time when I embrace it and that it draws me close to the Father. That's where we need to be. It's hard when we hear of people we know dying in a car accident. God, what are you trying to teach us when we hear of good friends dying and others injured? I need to draw close to God. That's the biggest lesson. We need to embrace the famine, the trial, so we grow stronger in our Christian walk. So what do we do if we've just endured it or tried to escape it? God is there. We need to grasp that glimmer of hope and start walking the journey back. And we're going to walk that journey with Ruth and Naomi as they start to walk back. Never give up. God wants us to come back. And he's there with open arms. The prodigal son, where was the father? Waiting, looking for the son to come back. And then he went out and embraced him. God will meet us. God will meet us.